Can I be real with you, Eric? I don't got a lot of thoughts right now. No thoughts, head empty. It's gonna be a real short episode, because I don't got shit to say.
I don't know if I can help that. I can try my best, but no promises.
Somebody's gonna fill this empty space right now.
True.
You know what? We'll do what we can. We'll do our best.
It's a good thing we've got such positive subject matter to go off of today. You know, we're really just going to have so much so many good things to talk about today here on the podcast. But before we get into it, Jesse, tell the folks at home a little bit about yourself and a little bit about how you got into the Nier series. What brought you to the Nier series and why you chose this section?
So my name is Jesse Vitelli. I'm a Libra. I like long walks on the beach. Mm-hmm. I'm the former associate editor of Prima Games, and now I'm a freelance games journo, because that's a booming industry right now. Decided to get in there. How I got into the Nier series is I didn't know what the hell this series was for, like, a good chunk of my life. Not like, oh, I know about Nier, and I've always been fascinated by it. It's like, I had no idea what the series was. And then a little game called Nier Automata came out, and I was like, I'll give this a shot. This looks cool. There's a lot of people talking about it. And I was like, oh, damn, this series got hands. This series got stuff to talk about. And then when Replicant came out, I reviewed it, and I was like, yeah, let's go back to the pseudo beginning, right? And let's talk about let's see what this is about. And so after playing both Replicant and Automata, I'm like, yeah, I'm a Nier sicko now. And now I'm here.
It's a good time being a Nier sicko, you know? We don't have a lot of games to tout, but boy, what we lack in entries we make up for in punching power, as it were. Although they are shutting down Nier Reincarnation, so I don't know if that holds up. But
you hate to see it.
Yeah. Today we are talking about two different sections of the post-time skip part of Nier Replicant, specifically Facade, the Loyal Cerberus, and the Airy, which will be Sacrifice. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about why you wanted to hit these sections in particular, Jesse.
So, really, I love Facade. I mean, the Airy section is, like, really, really powerful. But Facade is, like, something that I think has, like, truly fascinated me since playing Replicant. I think that entire, like, culture and the way they live by all these rules is just, like, really interesting and really funny in a lot of ways. I think it's, like, one of the moments that you get, like, a little bit of levity in this game. And so I was like, yeah, I want to be on one of the Facade sections. And then the bonus is that we get to also talk about this section of the Airy, which I think is powerful and heart-wrenching and a really good, I think, like, pivotal moment for Emil, particularly.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Mm. So we'll start. So where we left off last time was the Forest of Myth. Ken had just finished the all the different dreams, had retrieved the, I forgot what the name of the piece was, actually, all of a sudden. I should have been more prepared in my notes, but retrieved a piece of the key thing that we were trying to put together to get into the Shadow Lord's castle. And now we go back to Popola, and Popola has received a letter from the chief of the Airy. And I'll read it out here. To Popola, my greetings to you and your village. I hope everything is going well. Our village has shut itself away from the world for far too many years, and we have therefore decided it is time to change our ways. As part of this endeavor, we have resolved to establish a shop within the village. It is now open for business, and I look forward to seeing a great many customers visit from all over the world. With regards to the sacrifice keyword you wrote about, one of our villagers claimed to know the meaning behind the term. You are more than welcome to speak with him on the matter as part of your visit to the Airy.
It's the kindest thing any of them have ever said.
Yeah, basically a letter inviting us to the Airy, which, of course, Popola and Vice are both like, something's wrong here. That doesn't seem right. I don't know
there
about that.
Manners here.
Yeah, I know, right? Some surprisingly nice people here. But Nier, of course, wants to charge in anyways, saying, I won't get Yona back by just sitting around and waiting. And he also, of course, just wants to murder Shades. Like, come on. You can't just, like, put potential Shade murder in front of him. He's going to chase it every time. So we take off to the Airy. And on the way there, we have another one of our little party chats. Vice is saying that he can't believe that the Airy has opened up trade. They must have truly opened their minds, which Kaine is immediately like, I have my doubts. And even pushes back on the idea that the Airy is any kind of home to her, or has been any kind of home to her. For those at home who might have forgotten, they excluded her is the nice way of saying it. Definitely like pushed her out, did not show kindness to her. We go into the town and it is pretty vacant up front, of course. It's the area. Everybody's like a recluse. We head over to the chief's house and everyone is like talking weird. They're saying like, days are numbered. We're all doomed. It's all over. It's all done. Everyone is saying, oh, the Shades attacked again last night. Something is like wrong. And then we have a bunch of people over on the platform, the central platform. We run over to talk to them. Ken, at this point, are you feeling that something's up? That something's weird?
I mean, I was feeling like something was up when they sent us a nice letter instead of something that told us to get the fuck away. I mean, yeah, like, they clearly, like, as you're talking to people, they don't have any clue what you're why you're here or what you were even referring to. So something's clearly amiss.
We head down to the central platform, and we have this moment that I really, really love, where we're talking to one of the guards, and he's being very strange. He's talking very strange. He both like remembers the letter and then doesn't remember the letter, and then asks if we're a friend of Kaine's, and then finally says like, "Are you here to hunt Shades?" And Vice says, "Yeah, we're here to like, that's our goal. We want to eliminate every last Shade."
And Shade murder.
Uh huh. And the guard's like, "Every last one, every last." One, every last one, every last one, every and like starts going bonkers, and all of a sudden everybody turns into Shades and starts attacking the party. And this is like, granted, like you can get the sense that something's up, but I think the moment that we see this of like humans turning into Shades and attacking the party, like what was going through your head then, Ken?
It occurred to me that one, we hadn't been back to the area in a long time, so I kind of. It wasn't that I forgot, like, the vibe of the place, but I think it stuck out to me immediately as suspicious when there were so many people around that had not been there before. And so when the, you know, when the fighting starts happening, I'm like, oh, okay, then that explains the oddity there. The thing that I guess that caught me off guard at this point was, like, you know, again, like, I didn't know if it was supposed to factor into who's... Like, whose worldview it was supposed to really be talking about here when suddenly everything becomes a Shade and then you can kind of kill with reckless abandon. And then it takes a time, like, really, you know, selling that idea of, like, oh, you can kill everything here now. You don't have to be careful anymore. And which makes it, you know, considering what's going to happen later, I guess I'm sort of still reckoning with what the game is trying to tell me at this point. Yeah, it definitely felt like it's at this point that the game is trying to blur some lines and then make you reckon with what it meant to blur those lines and what you've done in the aftermath.
Yeah. I don't know about you, Jesse, and obviously like we have to kind of talk in ways that are like we won't want to give up the whole game, but what I found interesting about this section, even like watching it again, was just like the way that it directly puts you in the middle of this situation where Shades are attacking the player and guards and human characters are attacking the player. I feel like this is one of maybe the first and only times I remember fighting human enemies in Near Replicant, and it was very striking in that moment.
Yeah, it's interesting because like I think up until this point you've either been fighting like animals or Shades and nothing has really had a face, and I think it's really easy to kind of like swing wildly at a Shade and like not really think about it. And now suddenly you're faced with this like, okay, the people are turning into Shades and there are Shades around, are like the walls start to come down a little bit. You start to have to really think like, what am I actually doing here? Like what is actually happening, and like what does it mean to kill these people? And I think it's like one of the first times the game tries to like grapple with that in the sense of like normal enemies. Because I feel like they reserve a lot of that stuff for, like, boss fights and, like, other, like, really crucial moments in this game. I think of, like, the lab, specifically, with Emil. And when it starts to kind of, like, it tries to do some other stuff. And I think this is another moment where it's like, okay, you know, let's start asking some questions. And not necessarily giving answers, but definitely starting to poke and prod at what this thing is.
I think we'll talk more about this, I think, near the end of this section, because of, like, the big thing that happened at the end of the section. But What really does still hit me about this is a moment where, as you're fighting, you're kind of just like taking out all these different enemies, and you fight your way back to where Kaine is, and Kaine has like entered the village and is like fighting and stuff, and she is fighting a villager who's holding a sword, and like this is very clearly like a person, and Kaine is like, that's a shade, like I know that's a shade, and slashes the villager across the chest, and her brother runs over and starts calling them monsters, like calling the party monsters, saying, I don't care what she is, she's my sister and I love her. Then the sister, like, while they're all stunned by what's happening, like the sister transforms into a shade and like slashes Kaine across the gut, and she like drops to the ground, and obviously that's striking because that's Kaine getting like attacked, and you know, someone who normally isn't caught off guard. But also this is like a moment where we see like a human to shade transformation in real time, and then also like another human defending a shade, which like up to this point Nier has obviously been very bloodthirsty to kill shades, but this is the first time we've seen, I think, somebody really say like, no, don't kill this shade, like maybe outside of the ferryman quest, but even then that was like you end up having the guy turn on the shade.
Yeah, he was down for it by the end.
Yeah, whereas here, like, the villagers are clearly okay with whatever has happened here, whatever has changed at the area. They don't want it to, they don't want these shades to die. They feel that they're family and stuff like that. So,
I don't mean to cut you off.
No, you're good.
It's also a moment that kind of like flips the Kaine stuff on its head a little bit, where like Kaine is being outcast for like all of these different reasons, right? And they're always like, oh, Kaine is like a bad omen. Everything that's bad that happened to this town is because of Kaine and all this stuff. Like, as she, you know, as she's been a little kid, and now suddenly like you have a village of people that have turned on her, or that are shades and are monsters. And it's like now we're doing this like, oh, Kaine is trying to do the right thing, but is she doing the right thing? And it gets interesting, I think, in that regard, and especially as the game goes on and starts to talk about a lot of that stuff.
Mm-hmm. We fight just a bunch of shades, all the while we're just being berated by people from the bleachers, as I like to call it, just like yelling out from the area, like, "You're stop it, just leave, we don't want you here, like, stop killing them." We fight like a mini-boss and a bunch of armored bad guys. And meanwhile, all these black swirls are forming around the center platform, and eventually they manifest into what basically looks like... You remember that angel from Evangelion that, like, falls from the sky that they have to, like, catch stab? Yeah, that is always what this enemy reminds me of every single time. The way it's, like, leaves almost kind of form around the eyeball reminds me of that angel. Good thing there wasn't a recent interview where Yoko Taro talked about how Evangelion influenced him or anything. But no way.
Never.
Boy, I hope there's no Judeo-Christian symbology in this game, or this is going to get even wilder.
Oh, that would be crazy.
We fight a giant boss, and this is actually probably, all things considered, one of my favorite boss fights in Nier Replicant. I think it's like, number one, it's gorgeous. It's like visually impressive to the point that I went back and looked at the original version of it in the original Nier. It was also just like, it obviously doesn't look as good as Replicant, but it looks great. It looks really, really good. The design of the boss is really impressive. The way it has these like leaves and tentacles that kind of like flow over itself that create those openings that you're supposed to hit. I love the bullet patterns that just like low out of it, and then I love that halfway through this fight you have to use the actual structure of the area. You have to like run away and go up a ladder and go around to the back side of it to hit it while Emil keeps it busy. It's a really, really interesting fight. Ken, how did you feel playing through it?
Yeah, that last part was probably what stood out to me the most, was that it felt very much like a fight that could have only happened here, and where I think there have been some boss fights in this game that, you know, could have reasonably happened anywhere. Like, they don't make use of the environment in the same way, and like you're not really traversing it in a way that feels significant, whereas this did feel like I was having, like, even though we've only been here a couple of times, like, I have enough of an understanding of how the area is laid out that my strategies changed, because like I realized what I needed to do, and the only way to actually be able to accomplish it is by moving to this area and, you know, dealing with this fight, and also just like navigating the area in a way that was not really that common up to this point.
Yeah, Jesse, I'm curious, like, what you remember of this fight. Obviously, I don't think you played this recently, but did this one, like, stick out to you in terms of all the near fights that happen?
Yeah, and I think to, like, bounce off of Ken's point a little bit, like, I feel like a lot of the other fights up until this point are kind of just, like, arenas.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they just feel very, like, okay, big monster or animal or creature or whatever in front of you, kind of, like, in this circle area, like, fight it. And this is one of the big moments where you're like, oh, they've like really thought about this monster in this area and like what they can do with the Eri. And I think something that stuck out to me is like, I wouldn't say that the Eri was like ever a safe place, because like you do fight some things there, and like it's never been homey, right? It's never been like, it's never had like a good vibe, but you've also never felt like there was going to be this like massive threat there. And so to kind of take that and be like, oh, no, we're going to make you feel kind of uncomfortable having to fight on these, like, shoddy bridges and, like, over this, like, giant chasm. And, like, it's going to be a little uncomfortable and, like, it's going to feel a little weird. But, like, they take a big swing, and I think they ultimately land it. I think that fight is, like, definitely one of the more memorable boss fights in this game.
Mm. Yeah, we do, like, a whole fight up front. And, like I said, Emil eventually comes in and kind of holds the enemy in the center after we break the first seal, and we run around and hit it in the back to kind of break the second seal and do, like, a final fight and deplete the health bar for good. And Emil just really delivers a wham bam of a laser attack. I remember him like just rearing up and just blasting out of his face this like giant laser attack, and it pierces through the eye and it shatters, spilling blood everywhere, which again, hey, you know, Evangelion is hell. Then we get a loading screen with another mysterious science document. I love it when those pop up, they're my favorite thing. And a big cutscene, because this is the big cutscene of this section. Emil just keeps releasing power. He has launched a laser so powerful he cannot control it anymore. And Vice yells out, he's gone. His instincts have taken hold. The ultimate weapon is being deployed. Kaine comes to as Emil's magic is kind of slowly enveloping over the entire area. Tearing the village apart. We see like houses and bridges and stuff just get like torn off and thrown asunder. We fade to white and come back to Nier and Kaine looking out over this like desolate canyon where the area used to be, with Emil like floating above, finally kind of coming back into control. And then we cut to then them on the ground. Kaine is like propped up against a wall, obviously still injured. Nier is kind of sitting next to Emil, and Emil is just sobbing and is saying, what have I done? I killed innocent people. I killed them all. And Nier tries to comfort Emil, saying, you saved us. If it wasn't for you, we would all be dead. Like, we owe you. And then he leaves Emil with, like, really, don't look back. And we get the sacrifice fragment, and that's it. That's it for the Eri. Never coming back here. Fuck that place. Like,
there's nothing to come back to. It's gone.
Yeah. Ken, how'd you feel about this moment?
I want to pass it to you two first, because
okay.
I want to hear what y'all's feelings was about this specific scene.
Jesse?
Yeah, so I think this moment is, you know, Emil has been through a lot at this up until this point. Mm-hmm. And I think this is like the ultimate moment where like Emil, you know, succumbs to sort of what Vice is saying with like the ultimate weapon stuff. But also like it has big, like, my friends are my power energy, and like I will do anything to protect the people that I love. And I think Emil gets caught up in not knowing how to control that and is now going to have to reckon with the fact that, like, if I don't know how to control this, I am going to kill innocent people. And I think the use of innocent there is interesting, because, like, are they innocent people, or were they shades, or like what constitutes like innocent in this scenario? And I find that really interesting, and I think it's something that like Emil carries through the rest of the game.
Yeah, I when I think about this section and like what this moment means for Emil, it's like, but like Jesse was saying, up to this point Emil has been really struggling with what he is and as much as who he is, that he is this weapon that was created to do something, to be a great weapon for somebody, and he is still a person. He still wants to be a person, and saw it already. We had the wedding scene and the scene with Emil and Nier, which we were supposed to talk about as part of Facade, but we had to talk about earlier. We can circle back around to that in a moment, Jesse, if you'd like. But I really love that moment contrasted with this moment, because we see that Emil is struggling to reckon the two parts within himself, right? Like, he wants to be human. He wants to have these feelings, these emotions that he has, and live the lives that he sees laid out in front of him. But then when push comes to shove, he is a weapon. He is a danger. He is power incarnate. And this is that moment where, like, he also has to reckon with the fact that his existence as a weapon means that he is always able to cause great harm. And, like, no matter what you felt about the people in the Aerie, like, they were people. And I think blurring the lines here with people in shades gets even more interesting, because now, like, you have questioned why you're killing any of these things to begin with. You're starting to wonder, like, hey, what's going on? Like, how are they coexisting? Like, what is happening here? And then they're all wiped off the map in the most, like, brutal way, after they've been yelling at you to just leave, just get out of here. You're going to kill us all. And you did that. You actually did that. And I think it's a moment that really tees up Nier Replicant in a lot of ways, like, really just, like, literally puts the ball on the tee, say, like, hey, guess what? Like, we're getting into it now. Like, this is what the game is about. This is about the horrors that we can inflict on each other. This is about the nature of humanity. This is about the nature of existence. This is about what it means to exist and how you define yourself in this world. And we're going to start really getting into it. And sacrifice is always the moment where I feel like Nier just lays its hand out bare, saying, like, this is what we're going to be doing. This is what we're talking about, at least in, like, the Route A section. This is the moment where I'm like, okay, this is what the game's about. This is what we're doing. And I think it really hits. And I really love the moment of Nier almost, like, coldly telling Emil, like, don't look back. Like, this is, like, what is done is done. Like, this is a world that has coldly taken from every single person in this party. And Emil, whether he made a mistake or not, like, he has done something here. And they need to move forward and try to just make good with what they can in this world with what's left of it. And I think that's a really, maybe not, like, it's not a good thing. It's not like, yeah, Nier, forget that he killed all those people. But, like, it emphasizes to me the state that this world is in and all of them trying to just elicit some amount of good out of it. So,
yeah, and I think it's also important to remember that, like, Emil is basically still a child.
Yes.
Like dealing with emotions and, like, the gravity of that situation is, like, very traumatic and very, like soul-crushing in a lot of ways. But at the same time, Nier is trying to keep Emil on track. Like, hey, like, it kind of had to go down this way. Like, you saved us. Like, you did good, even if good is, you know, questionable.
Ken, what are your thoughts?
I mean, that was helpful to hear in some ways, because it does, like, not to say that, like, it was thematically lost on me what it was trying to convey. It just more to, I guess, like, hear that from people that have seen this entire game through, in terms of, like, its sort of a place within the larger story of Replicant. Because this moment was weird for me, because, I mean, honestly, like, y'all have been hyping it up. It's, like, one of these this really,
I've been hyping moment. It up, to be clear. I have been hyping it up.
Okay, fine. Eric has been hyping it up a fair bit. And I don't even think this was a moment of, like, feeling like my expectations were raised very high. I think it was just, like, I don't feel like, at this point, Nier Replicant has struck me in the way that I think it could by the time it's all said and done. Because I do still think, you know, whether it's the format of this show or just, like, yeah. I mean, I guess that is mostly it. It's just, like, a lot of Nier feels like vignettes of these very specific moments that it tries to convey, which are obviously, like, meant to embody a larger idea and theme, but in terms of, like, the actual execution is often so, like, flash in the pan that it's, like, honestly disorienting to me in terms of maybe compared to, I guess, like, modern video game storytelling in terms of, like, really trying to, you know, sit with an idea and examine it. And because, like, I didn't feel like I got, and again, this might be because I've only done main plot stuff for the show, primarily. I never really got, like, much sense of Emil, quote-unquote, instincts being, like, a problem for him in terms of, like, him suddenly becoming this, like, violent weapon of a person. So, like, when that happened, it felt very jarring and sudden. Like, I was like, oh, I guess that is a concern I need to have about Emil now that was not really communicated to me before. And then I also just found Nier's response to be just kind of not satisfactory in terms of, like, an exchange, in terms of an examination of an idea. I just kind of mean, like, basically, the thing ultimately boils down to, like, Emil being like, I just committed a genocide, and Nier's kind of like, don't worry about it. And then we move on. And it's just like, I don't know what would fix, I mean, again, like, the game still has however many hours left, and, you know, it has time to examine these things. But, like, in the moment, everything feels, like, so frantic in the way that Nier delivers theme to me. Like, it's like it has an idea that it will look into the camera and state, and then it will walk away so fast that nobody really talks about it. And also because of the nature of how the game is, at this point, we can kind of go wherever we want and do whatever we want. It feels like there are, like, long stretches of time where nobody talks about this thing that happened again, the thing that was apparently very traumatic for everybody, but everyone just kind of, like, moves on. And, you know, there's, like, a sort of jarring tonal shift that happens in every section of this game where they are still delivering upon the same themes and ideas, but just, like, again, I've said this before, like, the nuts and bolts of Nier storytelling, I think, just broadly don't do it for me. But then I look back at Automata, and I've gotten so far away from that game that a lot of the nuts and bolts of those storylines don't even, I barely remember them, but I do broadly remember the ideas that it was getting at. And
you're saying you don't specifically remember Backshot Bot and the Become as God section? Like, come on. That's gonna stick out. Backshot Bot. Did you not see that video on Twitter this week of the, like,
well, I did that,
dough,
like, that
rolling robot? No, that's a name that I'm coining. I've decided that he's going to be called Backshot Bot.
Right.
That's his name, because that's his goal in life.
Right, but who in Nier is the joke that you're making?
In Nier Automata? Don't remember that part of Nier Automata?
Literally, no.
Oh my god, I cannot wait until we get to that part of Nier Automata now. Jesse, you know what I'm talking about, right?
I think I know what you're talking about. I feel like there's a few different things that it could be, but I'm going to assume it's something that happens kind of early on.
Very early on. Like, yeah, it's like one of the first, when you're in the desert.
Yeah,
and you
desert,
like go,
Yeah.
That was the moment.
That was guest number one.
That was the moment playing Nier Automata where I was like, what the fuck is this game doing? This game is different.
But to get back to Kent's point real quick, though, like, I think it's, like, the same conversation we've had about, like, Evangelion, not to bring Ava up again, but, like, sure, sometimes the nuts and bolts stuff isn't the takeaway. Mm. Like, it is the broader themes that the game tries to wrestle with. And I know for, like, the nature of the show, right, like, talking about the nuts and bolts sort of, like, is what this is about, right? It's, like, going through it step by step. And I think the difference here is that, like, Eric and I have, like, hindsight. Mm-hmm. Like, we've seen this complete work, and, like, we can kind of fill in where we need to.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to say that, like, your viewpoint might drastically change, but I do think that, like, you come around to the end of this, you know, end of Nier Replicant, you might be able to fill in some of that stuff, and it might feel a little more, the breadth of it might expand for you.
Mm. Yeah. The two comments I would make here. Number one, I think Evangelion is actually a very useful comparison point, because I think Nier structures itself like a show, like a TV show almost, because I feel like a lot of these sections are very cordoned off. I think you're right, Ken, that a lot of them do feel like vignettes. Like, if you remember, like, early, even like most of Evangelion is very episodic. It is like, here is the angel of the week, here's how we're gonna fight it, we're gonna take it out, and there's gonna be like some story, some stuff going on in the background while all of that is happening. But it is very monster of the week for most of its run, and then kind of threads its story through there. So I think that's important. But I also think that, like, the difficult thing of talking about Nier is that it is in many ways a layer cake. This is a story that is going to not just tell itself, but like retell itself, if that makes sense. It's going to like give you new information that is going to recontextualize old information, that is going to shift the way that certain things, certain events play out, or even just like the way that your view shapes how those events play out in for you from your perspective. I'm trying to like talk around a lot right here. But like the ways in which Nier builds upon itself, I think maybe they smooth out a little bit for Automata. I think Automata is a little bit different because in that one you kind of have the like tandem like A and B runs, and then like CDE is all like one sprint to the end, basically, right? And it's basically like two halves of a game. Here we've kind of got a different structure that has not fully revealed itself yet, but I think is going to feel different than Automata, and is going to maybe help with some of the notes that you've had about like, oh, this felt kind of strange, or this felt kind of different, or like, I don't really get why this is the thing that's happening here. I think a lot of that is going to be answered by things that we are getting to. If, and I know like we play that game a lot here where we're being like, don't worry, it's coming up. Don't worry. Mm-hmm. You're going to get answers, but you will. You will. I think Sacrifice, even just on its own, and right here, is just, again, it's a moment. I want to jump back to one other thing you said, Ken, about the way that Nier responds. I think something that I really like about Nier Replicant is that all of its characters are all messed up in their own ways. And there is not really, like, I would never expect Nier to have the emotional capacity to know how to respond to Emil in this moment. this boy is not well. This boy is, he himself is very much like, hey, good job, you killed all of them, like, and we're all here. And like, he's mildly sympathetic. He's like, you know, if it wasn't, he's like trying to comfort Emil. He's like, if it wasn't for you, we'd all be dead. We really owe you, like, you did us a solid. And like, that's not really what somebody who did the thing that Emil just did wants to hear. Like, they don't want to hear like, oh, actually, you did us a real solid, man, we owe you. Like, that's not gonna make Emil feel better, but that's how Nier feels. Nier's like, this is great. He's like,
well, so Nier just looks at it as, oh, we just killed a bunch of shades.
Yeah,
like the gray area doesn't exist to Nier. Nier is like, no, those were shades, and the shades must die.
And clearly, if there were people involved with it, then the people are just complicit, and so they can go to. And it's really highlighting like how Nier feels in this moment. He is so dead set on just killing shades and finding Yona. And his priorities are honestly more in that order than the other way around. That he's just cool with whatever result gets them closer. He got the sacrifice fragment. He got the piece that he needs to go open the Shadow Lord's castle. He's all good. So when he says, really, don't look back, he's like, eh, don't worry about it. You don't have anything to regret here. And like Emil and even Kaine are like obviously taking it in a little bit different. I do think that this is one that's going to kind of brew and bubble for a while, and we'll definitely be talking about this again at some point. But for now, we take Nier's advice and we don't look back. We just head on to Facade and go take care of the events there. So for Jesse, who was not here, we did have some events that took place outside of this episode. Originally, we went to Facade. There's going to be a wedding. Fira and the King, we're getting married.
Yay.
Wolves interrupt and murder her.
No.
And so we're teaming up with the King to go take down the wolves. Now, before we get to that, Jesse, anything you wanted to talk about prior to that stuff?
I really, really like Facade for a lot of reasons that I kind of talked about at the beginning of the episode, so I won't rehash them too much. But I just think that like Nier has like a few different towns. But I think like Facade acts as like a city in a way that I don't feel like we get a lot of in this game. And it's just really fascinating to like look at this culture and then be like, we follow this strict set of rules, and like we will be blessed if we follow these rules. And there's a long list of like rules that you can look at online. I love that there's like a long list of laws that you can just peruse, and they're very silly, and but like they're, everyone in the city buys into them, right? It's like part of their religion. And to me, that's like, oh, you can have this sort of like silly little rule set, but like if everyone is buying into it, then it just makes that city feel really lived in. And I feel like with Nier, you get like shades of that, no pun intended, but like you get shades of that in I forget what the place is called. It's where the lighthouse is. I don't remember the name.
Oh, the seaport.
The seaport. Yeah. You get a little bit of that, but like Facade feels like a bustling like marketplace, and there's a lot going on, and there's a lot of people, and there's a ruler, and there's like deep, deep history there. And I've always said, like, if Nier was to ever go like the spinoff route, like full on spinoff, like I'd love them to make a game about like Facade and learning like why did these rules come into place, and sort of like the ancient history of Facade, because I think it's just like there's so much to pull from that well. And like we only get small glimpses of it in Replicant. Like you get to do a couple of things there, and at this point this is what, like the third time you're returning to Facade, or going to Facade in general. It's like pre-time skip, and then it's the wedding, and then it's what we're about to talk about.
Yeah,
I don't think you go to Facade for any other reason unless cleaning up side quests.
Yeah, there's like reason to come back here for side quests. There's a few weapon side quests that we have to do here
right.
to get certain stuff for ending C, I believe, is the one that needs all the weapons. But otherwise, we're just kind of here for general, you know, main plot stuff. And I think the thing that always strikes me about Facade as a city is that it has public transportation. Like, it has...
Really bad public transportation, yeah. but it does like, have it.
Basically a
unskippable
subway.
Public transportation.
Yeah, and I almost find that interesting as a way of like, okay, so y'all are gonna laugh at me for this, but every time I go to New York, I'm always terrified of my first ride on the subway, because I know I'm gonna fuck it up. I know I'm gonna do something wrong. I'm gonna like not swipe my card right and slam my crotch into the freaking bar. I'm gonna like card right. I'm gonna like do something wrong. I'm gonna get like the wrong side. One time I did swipe my card on the wrong side, and not only did my bar not go, but some dude just like took the free in and just like took it, and I was like, okay. And I like that is Facade to me. That is like walking into a social situation in which there are norms and customs, and there is like an accepted way of how you move through a space that a significant number of people occupy, because like the more people that gather, the more that you do like need to have the social contract, right? Like the idea that there are rules that everybody is going to follow that aren't like codified, but are like, you know, you're going to kind of mind your own business. You're going to like understand how to keep things moving. You're not going to stop in the middle of the sidewalk. Like you're going to try and be like a person that is accommodating to other people, because all of you have to live in the same space and occupy the same space to stay alive. And I find Facade really interesting as like, here are these humans in this dystopian world replicating the ideas of their, you know, predecessors, of things that came before them. I think without even really much like reason to do so, this is just like the social contract has emerged naturally in this like dystopian world. And I think that's really interesting. I always find it when media tries to address that, they like get into some ideas. Usually it gets wrapped up in like, I find it interesting you brought up religion, Jesse, because I do think there are like shades of religion here, but I think like Facade does keep it grounded in like, this is for like the good of the whole. It's almost socialism. It's like, it's done for the good of the city. Like the rules exist for the good of the city. And there's a feeling that, like, when rules are created, they're done for a reason. And they're done because a situation arose that they then needed to address. And so they created a rule for it. I just find, yeah, this place is really cool. I like it every time we come here, even though, like, sometimes you mess up and move through the area wrong. And then you have to, like, redo it. And it's frustrating, but it's, like, good frustrating.
It's also, it's, like, to say a negative about Facade, I think its color palette is kind of bad. Because like you have the Junk Heap, which is like a very similar shades of brown and like rust, and then you go to Facade and it's like very similar, and it's like, at least for me, it's like, oh, I wish the city had some more color. And I think during the wedding scene you get some more color with like the masks and everything else, but there's something about just like brown sand that makes you like, that reminds you like, oh right, this was like an older game when everything kind of had that hue.
Mm-hmm. Oh, this is absolutely a 360 generation game.
Yeah.
Oh my
god. Like, oh, it's got the brown filter on it. Okay.
The hue. Yeah. the desaturation. So we get to this point. Hypo really wanted to be on the podcast. We head back to Facade, and we go to meet up with the king. And the king just wants to kill wolves, man. King is just really determined to do some wolf murder. And Vice is over here like, you realize that the wolves that attacked were only like part of a pack, right? Like, they've got more wolves. And King
one
is like,
one bad apple spoils the bunch, baby.
I think more so that like, you're gonna die if we try to go fight these wolves. But the king's like, no, I want to do wolf murder. And Nier is like, I just want to do murder. And Kaine surprisingly is into it, but points out like, we're doing this for Fira. Like, Kaine gives a shit about Fira, which I do like about Kaine. We love her for that. So they set out, this party heads out the door, and immediately the royal guard is meeting him, and they're like, hey, what's up? You didn't like go through the proper channels to go fight the wolves. The king's like, who cares? Did the rules prevent Fira from dying? And the royal guard is like, no, but we as the royal guard have to do our duty. And so, like, meanwhile, while you have been getting ready to go out and fight the wolves, they have gone and talked to every single person in Facad and got permission to go to war so that the men of the mask may march and the king may have a rightful reason to march and adhere to the rules, which just, it gets me every time. It's really nice. I like that moment. You get the immediate sense of, like, what Fira meant to this town, which is really nice. And then you also get this like moment of, they follow the rules, but they understand when to bend them, right? Like, they understand when to like use, you know, an improper read of the rules because it's the right thing to do. And I really love that.
Yeah, it's also just like a moment of like, again, like everyone has to buy in. Mm-hmm. Right? Like if one person just, like if the king had gone out against the wishes of the city, like this whole system unravels, right? If like one person can break the rules and like not consult anybody, then like suddenly everybody could break the rules. Mm-hmm. And so I like that they stick to their, you know, their beliefs, and they're like, no, we have to make sure everybody is on board at least a little bit in order to like justify bending the rules to our will for this specific occasion. And like, I think the game justifies that really well.
So we zip to the boss fight arena. And Ken, mm-hmm. How do you feel about the fight against the wolf pack and then the king wolf? Because I gotta be honest, this is maybe, like, we had one of my favorite boss fights before. This is probably one of my least favorite boss fights.
Honestly, to me, it didn't even really register, like, a boss fight. Because, like, it was just a, there, I don't really feel like the wolves are that much of a nuisance. Even the shade one that is, I guess, supposed to be the boss in all this. I mean, they're fast, but that's pretty much it. That's pretty much the only strategy that they have. Their only like tool is their speed, but it's, you know, a well-timed roll gets you out of that.
You also have like an entire army here with you backing mm-hmm. you up. You have like the party, so you have like Emil and Kaine, and then obviously you have Nier and Vice, but like you also have the king and all of the masked men, and they're all just like doing work, killing these wolves.
They are going to war.
Yeah.
They did not mess around.
Like, for all the hoopla, it was over a lot. Like, all the talks they had to have about whether or not they should come do this lasted longer than the actual fight itself.
Yeah, it's almost like the idea of going to war was, like, more intensive than, like, what they were setting out to do in the first place, right? Like, they just needed to take out a wolf and, like, the big wolf and then some smaller wolves. But, like, you know, sometimes you get caught up in red tape trying to do a simple thing.
I mean, it maybe not so much as the Aerie, but I do think it highlights that, like, what we are doing here is ugly. What we are doing here is not a pretty work. Like, we are killing an entire, like piece of the ecosystem, basically. Like, we're slaughtering all the wolves. And the way that the king wolf dies, when the king, like, leaps up and like stabs him through the eye, is just still like jarring. It's such a like brutal elimination of an enemy in this game. And I feel like as we have watched this game proceed, it has been getting like bloodier and more violent as the game has gone on. Like, pre-time skip near kind of felt like, haha, we're gonna go fight shades and win the day. It felt almost like Kingdom Hearts, and I always think of Kingdom Hearts because like the little shades kind of look like the little heartless, but like you're just kind of like, haha, kill the shades, they turn into like ether, and then I get a word from them, and the word means power, and I can power myself up. And now we're at the point where we kill a shade, and it's like the wolf, where it's like the big boss in the area, where like blood is spilling everywhere, and it's just like very obvious that what we're doing is super messed up. And you know, it's justified to our characters. They are fighting to defend Fasad. They're fighting to protect them from a force that has like openly aggressed against them, and one that murdered their friend, but still doesn't like stop the end result from being incredibly brutal and like hard to watch even. Because yeah, it like it goes right through his eye. We see like the whole thing. It's messed up. So we get the fragment, we get loyal Cerberus. we did it. Good job. And we cut to a graveyard where the king is mourning over Fira's grave. And the king even starts to regret like bringing Fira into this life. And then Weiss like kind of, you know, consoles him and says that like Fira was perfectly content with the life she had. She was terribly proud of her king, and now you must do all you can to honor her memory. And then he starts to weep before collecting himself and reminding himself that he has to not cry in front of others. The king must not weep in front of others. And of course, Nier is like, this is all the shade's fault. And that's it. And that's kind of the note we leave this on, because at this point, we only have a short little thing we have to do. And then we're off to the Shadow Lord's castle for the ending A. So like we're right there at ending A pretty much. So before we get to that, final notes on Fasad, Jesse, anything you want to bring up here?
Fasad is, how do I put this? It is something that I enjoy going back to every single time. Mm-hmm. And I think like, you know, we've talked kind of about it in pretty good detail, and without, you know, spoiling anything for our boy Ken here. I'll just leave it at, I think Fasad is full of really important stuff. Ken, and I think it is something that continues to be important long throughout Nier.
Absolutely. 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 Ken, how do you feel about Fasad?
I feel like when we were first here, I felt maybe a little cynical towards it as like a cultural place within the Nier universe. And I don't know that that's entirely gone away, but that might be my like general feelings towards organized religion, but like more just like this sort of I don't know, like it, you can go back and listen to that episode, but I guess I am curious to see, like, because y'all say that Fasad persists in a way, and I am curious if the game ever goes out of its way to interrogate its structures moving forward, or is that just kind of
Its structures like merit interrogation?
I mean, I think, you know, having a place that where everyone is under a specific rule that they have to adhere to, I think that deserves interrogation on its face. Because, like, yeah, everyone's kind of into it, but, you know, how does something like that get established in the first place? How do people bring people into that and sell them on that idea to the point where they uproot their entire lives and live by this code? But it kind of seems like y'all's read on it is a lot more positive and or optimistic, maybe more is the right word. So maybe that is just me reading into things that maybe the text is not intent, and that's fine. And I guess I will just, you know, move forward with that in mind. I do think.
Oh, okay, you go.
No, like if you have something to say on that specifically, I was about to change.
I just wanted to say I think that like Fasad is layered, and like I think there are a lot of different reads on Fasad, and I think that like there's just a lot to interpret there, and I don't think there's like, you know, one way to interpret that city or how it came to be or the powers that be. I do think that there's just, you know, a lot of like everyone who goes there might pull something different from there, because I do think it is one of the more like intricate pieces of the Nier universe in terms of its culture and its like ideologies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I would say like Fasad, and honestly most of the towns, like the interest you're going to find is not necessarily in any sort of like interrogation, but more, well, maybe not so much interrogation, but like, I guess trying to understand how these places, or trying to, I guess, let your mind connect dots about how these places might have come to form, because like the one thing that we just have not talked about too much, but is like kind of lurking in the background, is we know that this place is like that this world is like thousands of years old, obviously, that like something happened, like something went wrong, because there are pieces of a modern civilization, quote unquote, like scattered about. The Lost Shrine is clearly like a piece of a modern civilization that fell to something. And so understanding what that is, and then understanding how people who live in this world then came to these different ideas of what civilization should be in the wake of that, and how they formed it and how they created it. You know, you have places like the Eri, which like they shut themselves off and they became isolationists. You have Nier's hometown, which is kind of open, kind of like, I would say they're like kind of this like welcoming town, but then they like get attacked by Shades. Like they get basically reduced to almost rubble halfway through the story. You have like the seaport, which is kind of this place of commerce and open trade and open ideology, but ends up harboring a darker secret underneath all of it. I think some of the side quests actually do a really good job of fleshing out the seaport and making it more of a realized place. And then Facade kind of slots in there as like, how does this city persist? How do they live in such a harsh climate? How do they continue to grow and thrive and be one of the larger cities? Well, clearly the rules are part of it. They have continued to persist because of the rules, but then also the rules often cause harm for them too. So I think it's interesting to see them in that regard. So I think if you're looking for an origin story for Facade, I don't think you really find that in your Replicant. There's some external media that kind of like helps with that.
Sure. But I guess it's more, it's mostly played pretty straight. Like everyone seems to be happy to be there, but like, again, like having this like rule set that everyone has to do, like everyone operates under, like it has like fashy vibes to it. And I don't think that the game ever really reckons with that based on everything y'all are saying. And well, maybe it's so just, you know,
there's, I mean, fashy lately, there's an element of like control from like a government force, right? That like these mm-hmm. have to be enforced, right? What I do find interesting about Facade is that it is then equally employed to be like in this moment in Loyal Cerberus where it is used as like all the citizens are agreeing that they should do this thing. Because like, again, I think the war rule is really interesting, that everyone in Facade has to agree to go to war, because war has consequences. War can blow back on a country, can blow back on a nation. And so that very much is not fashion. That is like the inversion of it. So that's, well, I guess what I'm saying is like, that's why I find Facade fascinating, is because it is this like, it is communal in a lot of ways. It is also rigidly enforced in a lot of ways, and seeing how those things line up with each other and then cause friction is what's really interesting about Facade.
Right. And then when it has, and then in that case, then the framing becomes more like cult-like, and that is also curious to me, again, like why that's not really interrogated in any, at least as far as,
I mean, or it's socialist, or it's like communal, or it's the idea that like everybody has a say. It's, I mean, to some degree democratic, but like that's, I guess that's the point I'm trying to make, is that like Facade is very interesting to analyze and understand and like poke and prod at, and I don't know that the game is gonna do too much more. There's like maybe a little bit more we're gonna see. I'm not admittedly like as up to my Facade as the game goes on compared to other parts of this game. But I do think that it's like a piece of Nier Replicant that has like persisted as an interesting thing to explore, and even gets explored later on in other media.
I think also like when you look at a universe, a region that is constantly under attack, I think a lot of these people, whether they like the rules or not, are doing it out of survival. They're like, these rules have kept us alive. Like we are I don't know if thriving is the right word, but we are surviving, and life is pretty good. You know, they probably hear stories of other regions being attacked or other places, you know, under siege or the shades encroaching on their stuff. And, like, the wolves, I think, are, like, a key moment of being like, oh, this can happen to us, too. And maybe we need to be careful and sometimes bend the rules. And I think that that is the game trying to maybe interrogate a little bit of that. But I do think a lot of it comes from, like, we have a king, and the king sort of enforces, helps enforce the rules, and the rules are keeping us afloat. And so we don't want to rock the boat because everyone in this world is kind of just trying to survive because it's bad out there.
There's an interesting one, and I actually, as I was doing some Azad research, reading through the wiki, I found this one. One of the first rules that Fira tells you about when she's showing you around the city during the earlier part of Azad is... thou shalt not live on level ground. And the actual origin of it, which do we care about mentioning, like, a thing you learn in Nier Automata through, like, text and stuff like that, that we probably would not run into otherwise because it's in kind of an obscure area.
If it's relevant, then
yeah. So Nier Automata basically confirms that the reason this rule was created was that the masked people, like the denizens of Assad, originally lived on plains along the coast, but one day the village was destroyed by a great wall of water. Basically, the ancestors of Assad had, like, eroded the land around where they were living. It was once the site of, like, a great forest and stuff, but continued to erode the land, and then they were flooded by a great wall of water. And so part of that was, like, they made the rules because they learned a lesson, you know? It's like it harkens back to that, like, how do people survive in the new world? And they were like, oh, well, we learned that a flood can wipe us out if we live on level land, so we clearly should not live on level land. So they made it a rule, like, don't live on level land. And that's what I find interesting about Fassad. It's like backtracing all of this and understanding how, like, these rules are definitely cumbersome, but also are, like, how these people have survived and manage to live in this place.
Mm.
Anyway. Yeah. It's an interesting place. I definitely think it's one worth continuing to talk about as it comes back up in Nier Replicant. Ken, before we go, I did have you undertake a few side quests that were in Fassad that specifically are meant to unlock weapons, which we will eventually need. I will tell you that any weapons you unlock stay unlocked forever. You will always have those weapons. That's why I'm having you do them sooner rather than later. How did you feel about those in particular? Because there was one that you really seemed to just not gel with.
I mean, some of it was busy work. Like, okay, you go kill this person on one side of the map and then come back and tell me that you did it. Some of it was we went back to, what was the name of the temple that, like, it has rules and you have to abide by them?
The Baron Temple.
Yeah. So we went back there and... Honestly, like, I think if I had not been playing them at 11:30 p.m., I think I might have been, like, more chill about it. But, like, when very suddenly I was dealing... Because, like, Nier's a very slippery character. I don't know if you know this about him. Yeah. He, like, you know, there are these platforming sections on these fucking, like, minuscule blocks that you have to jump on. And
is
then...
this the side-scrolling part where you're jumping over the quicksand?
The box. Yes.
Yeah, that part sucks.
Blocks, yeah. It's awful.
And then my guy just, like, takes a fucking tumble into the sand every time. And just, like, damn, if y'all don't have, like, tight platforming, don't do platforming. That's like, one of the things that's interesting about Nier. Like, it tries to do everything. Like, there's a lot of, like, different plays on different genres in this game. And, you know, certain parts, I think, it gives a lot of Jack of all trades, master of none sort of deal. I'm still not gathered at this point, because, like, the game is so, like, homage-driven in a lot of ways. Like, the Emile's Mansion is, like, a Resident Evil homage.
Yeah.
That it's, like, I fully feel that Yokotaro just fucking loves video games, and it's, like, wants to try all these cool things that he has seen in other games that he likes, and is, like, I want to, you know, give it a shot. And that's, like, really endearing of, like, that's a really endearing trait I think that Nier has. But when it comes down to, like, the actual execution of all those ideas, it makes the game, like, very frustrating to play in certain points. And that was certainly one of them.
Yeah. I feel like that section is got to be either, like, Mario or, like, Metroid or something. But it's, like, I think that part specifically is a, it's going back up them, because the first time you do those rooms, you go down the other way, and it's going up the blocks that I always hated doing. I can't remember. Do you have an air dash in this game? I don't think you have an air dash.
You have a little bit of one. You do.
Do you?
You do?
You have like a little bit of like the air dodge, right? Yeah, it's not really like a full dash.
It's not like the Nier Automata where you have like a real big dash in here or anything like that.
No.
Yeah. I fell in the sand a lot there. It is a rite of passage. So. But yeah, there's a lot of quests. There might be one more that I might ask you to do, or I might wait until ending B to tell you to go do this. But there is one more that you should do at some point. But I think we are broadly at the point where you can just go head on up to that castle and get towards the first ending of this game. How do you feel about that?
I'm ready for it, because I'm getting a little frustrated. Like, constantly, every time, like, I have, like, I mean, it's again, like, it's the nature of the show, where, like, throughout games that you had not played, I was kind of like, oh, but wait, this thing is coming, it's gonna bring it all fucking together, and it feels like, you know, we're 10 fucking episodes feel, now. Wait, what?
How's it feel, Ken? How's it feel?
I don't know, like, we're 10 episodes into the season, and I still don't feel like I even see glimpses of the game that y'all talk about.
Yeah, that's kind of just the nature of this.
Yeah. I genuinely mean this. Like, I think ending A is going to do a lot to... First of all, I will thankfully be able to stop having to hide a lot of things about this game from you. That's going to be great. Y'all at home who have been listening to Ken talk about this game and say a bunch of things and question a bunch of things... who have been just dying at home. It's all going to get resolved next episode. It's going to be great. We might as well just start next episode with us just being like, okay, cool. So let's talk about it. Let's talk through all the things that just happened. That's going to be wonderful. I get to stop pulling that card so often. But also I think ending A, like Nier Replicant, for good and for ill, I will say, really just... is a sum of its parts, is like this is a collective whole, this is one like collected idea. I think there are parts of it that stand out, but I think Nier Replicant, especially up to ending A, is really about like getting to that first ending and seeing like the moment where the game goes, okay, cool, like cards on the table, this is what's happening, this is like every question you might have up to this point, we're just going to answer it real quick. And I'm personally very excited for that moment for you. So I might be saying this because I'm urging you to play it sooner rather than later, but I'm very excited to see you.
Fat chance, my dude, that a new Overwatch season just started today.
Oh, good. More Overwatch for the Overwatch gods.
Life protects life, don't you know?
Yeah, where are we doing the Overwatch Normandy FM season?
When they release that story mode. Ayo.
On that note, Jesse Vitelli, where can the folks at home and the Blizzard PR reps find you?
the Blizzard PR reps can find me at Do Not Contact Me. Everyone else can follow me wherever. Just type in my name, Jesse Vitelli. You'll find me. I have the best SEO of any Jesse Vitelli in the world. If you tap my name into Google, I'm like the first like three pages. You can find all my socials there. I don't have a website or anything fancy. I just vibe.
The best way to be. Honestly. Is there another? You should check out Jesse's work. Yeah.
I was gonna say, is there another Jesse Vitelli that's like doing shit?
No, that's why I have the best SEO of any Jesse Vitelli.
When you say of any Jesse Vitelli, that implies that there are other.
Because there are other ones. I'm sure. I'm not the only Jesse Vitelli in the world, but there's no other Jesse Vitellis that are like on the internet as much as I am.
Mm-hmm.
So like, if they exist, you have to go to page like 5 of Google to find them.
I think there's like an electrician, somebody, Kenneth Shepherd out there. Hold on, let's Google. Oh no, I'm the first one. Oh, okay, yes, it's an engineer, Columbia Engineering, Ken Shepherd. But no, like the first thing's me. My Kotaku bylines are next. Oh, there's a doctor, an endocrinologist.
Yeah, but how much are they on the internet? You know.
Yeah, I mean, enough that like we got like tweeting? A solid mix of us. Are they what?
Are they tweeting?
They do not appear to be, no.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh man, it's so me all the way down that even my articles from the student newspaper come up. Oh, that's
a good thing to say on the podcast.
Oh, I mean, I can't stop it. They're there.
That's in the world now. Listeners, go check out the newspaper articles.
I haven't read these in a long time. Anyways, I'm gonna be doing that later. but there's also a concept artist who likes to fish. So shout outs to that guy. Folks, that's gonna be it for me and Ken. I gotta go deal with this. So for Ken, for myself. Oh yeah, oh, duh. We gotta plug things. We're Normandy FM. We're a retrospective podcast that covers a bunch of video games. We're currently on Nier Automata, Nier Replicant, and Nier Automata. But you can go find all of our previous seasons, including like Mass Effect, Dragon Age, Last of Us, Cyberpunk, bunch of stuff back there in our backlog. As always, if you want to support us, help keep the lights going and turned on and all of our audio backed up and recorded and safely on the internet, you can head to patreon.com/normdfm, where we have kind of a tip jar Patreon going. As always, we like to shout out everybody who backs us at the top level on the pod every time we do a new episode. This episode, that list includes John Warren, Andrea Sheeran, Joshua Jarvis, Seth Pitts, Darius Pippins, Shane Erickson, Cypress Catwell, and Christoph Weiss. Thank you all so much for your contributions and helping us do what we do. Next episode, we will be talking about Ending A of Nier Replicant. But for now, for Jesse, for Ken, for myself, thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Normandy FM.